Okay. Hare Krishna. So instead of the regular Bhagavatam class today, we're going to continue on with the seminar about chanting. And hopefully we'll try and get through the rest of the material. What's today's date?
25th.
Today is August the 25th. We are in Ljubljana, Slovenia. So, yesterday we were talking about unauthorized forms of chanting, and we ended up with the authorized way to sing new songs and mantras. So today we're going to begin with other forms of public chanting, airport greetings. Because when you were traveling with Prabhupada, every day was like a festival, practically. Because wherever you went, of course, it was a very special event for the temple devotees that Prabhupada was visiting. They, generally speaking, most temples got to see Prabhupada maybe once a year, especially in the West. So naturally, there was a very festive atmosphere throughout Prabhupada's stay. So it was like, when you were traveling with Prabhupada, it was like being in one continuous festival, one after the other, you know, for months and months. Except when we got back to India, then things settled down a little bit. But anyway, the first opportunity that I got to travel with Prabhupada overseas was in April of 76, when Prabhupada traveled from Bombay to Melbourne in Australia. And as it turned out, that trip where we went from Australia to New Zealand, to Fiji, to Hawaii, Los Angeles, Detroit, Toronto, New Brindavan, Washington DC, New York, London, Paris and New Mayapur, Tehran, and then we ended up back in Bombay again on August the 13th. So we left on April the 20th and we arrived back August 13th, nearly 4 months. That was Prabhupada's last world tour. We didn't know it at the time, of course, but that's the way it worked out. He did make one last visit to the West in 1977 for Janmashtami when he visited London, and that was when he was very, very sick. And that was the last trip that he made overseas. So anyway, I was fortunate enough to travel with Prabhupada on that last world tour. So as I say, on April the 19th, we had left Bombay, and actually the 18th, and then on the 19th we arrived in Australia. It was a very long trip. I think altogether we were traveling for about 22 hours. We had flown to Singapore, then there was a 4-hour stopover, but then there was a delay with the aeroplane for another 3 hours. So we spent 7 hours in the airport there. And in those days, the Singapore airport was really, really substandard. It was an old Air Force airport that they were using. And they had not yet built the fabulous airport that they have now out at Changi, which is probably the best in the world now. But the airport in those days was really bad. And although Prabhupada had a first-class ticket, when Prabhupada traveled, he got a first-class ticket, the servant got a first-class ticket, and then the rest of the party got economy-class tickets. So when we left Bombay, there was Srila Prabhupada, myself, and Pushyakrishna Swami as the secretary. And when we landed in Singapore, because we had no intention of going into Singapore, but the Singapore authorities were very antagonistic towards the devotees, so they wouldn't allow us in. And we pointed out that actually we only want to go into the first class lounge, and we're entitled to do that because we have the tickets. But the first class lounge was inside the airport, and you had to actually go through immigration to get to the first class lounge. So there was some debate with the authorities there about letting us in. Finally they agreed because we had the tickets. But when we went inside, the first class lounge turned out to be a pub, you know, beer. Fortunately, when we first went in, it was closed to the public, but they let us in because we had the tickets. So we spent about an hour inside this pub. Prabhupada took a little prasadam that we brought with us. Then it was opening time. So people started coming in and they started drinking and smoking. So it was impossible for us to stay inside there. So then we had to go out, and the only seats that they had, public seating, were these horrible molded plastic seats, you know, hard as rocks. And we had to just sit there for 3 or 4 hours. Then they told us that there was a 3-hour delay because some problem with the aircraft. So we ended up spending about 5 or 6 hours sitting in these horrible seats. And then we got on the plane. It was an overnight flight. So, of course, it's difficult to sleep on the aircraft. And Prabhupada didn't used to sleep at night very much anyway. Although he did manage to get about an hour's rest by going into the economy class section and finding a row of 3 seats that was empty and then laying out across them. Then when he came back and he sat down, we had the very first 2 seats in first class, which was right in the nose of the plane. And the movie screen was right in front of our faces. And then they showed a movie. So we're sitting there and this movie's going on right in front of us. And it was funny because it was a war movie starring an English film star, David Niven. So at one part, they're storming a hillside. And he's running up the hill. He's got his revolver in his hand. Then he gets shot. So he falls down. Then he jumps up again and he runs up some more. Then he gets blown up and he falls down. Then he jumps up again and he runs some more. Then he gets shot again and he goes down and then he gets up and he runs some more and he, you know, conquers the hill. So Prabhupada's kind of looking at this because we didn't have any sound. And it looked totally ridiculous. You know, movie things, getting shot all over the place. He's still going. And after the third time when he gets shot again, Prabhupada looks at me and he raised his eyebrows. He said, "Still alive?" It was very funny. And then Prabhupada took out his beads and chanted his japa. Anyway, so we arrived in Melbourne. And first of all, the plane touched down in Sydney. So we had an hour stopover in Sydney. Which wasn't bad because when we were in the transit, then the Sydney Temple president, Jai Dharmadas, he came in to the transit lounge and he had a big plate of fruit that they'd prepared specially for Prabhupada. So we had a little refreshment and then we flew down to Melbourne, which was another hour and about an hour and 10 minutes or something. So finally we arrived in Melbourne at about noontime. So it was a very long trip. So before landing, we filled out the customary landing cards. You know, they give you a form and you have to fill in and say how much baggage you've got. So it required a list of baggage. So without thinking carefully, we filled out Prabhupada's card, indicating that he had 1 suitcase. Once off the plane, we passed through the immigration without difficulty and entered into the baggage hall. So we decided that Srila Prabhupada and I should go directly through the customs, carrying only Srila Prabhupada's red attaché case, and Pushtakrishna Swami would bring the suitcases. Because, you know, we were waiting and waiting for the baggage to come through, and it was taking a long time. They had these carousels, and there was no seating anywhere. So, you know, we had to stand around. So we thought, you know, let Prabhupada go straight through, and Pushtakrishna would bring everything through. However, the customs officer insisted that Srila Prabhupada had to wait for the suitcase that was indicated on his form. I pleaded strongly with the man to please allow Srila Prabhupada to go through immediately. I assured him that I would wait and take full responsibility for the suitcase. I pointed out that there were no chairs for Prabhupada to sit down on, and it would take at least 30 minutes more for the baggage to come through. I said Prabhupada was over 80 years old, he had been traveling for so many hours, and it was unnecessary to make him wait, and that I had packed his bag for him anyway. Despite my best attempts, the customs official was utterly uncooperative, and he refused to allow Srila Prabhupada to go through. The discussion became heated as my temper rose. A small crowd of passengers gathered around us to see what the disturbance was. Srila Prabhupada just walked away and stood quietly to the side. He didn't say anything. I was getting really angry with this man because he wouldn't let us through. So the official was obdurate. He returned to his post, leaving me standing there fuming. Then 2 minutes later, an airport policeman approached me to ask what's going on. So I explained that we simply wanted Srila Prabhupada to be allowed to go straight through the customs without his bag. So he asked, "Is all that going on because of him?" That was the loud roar of a tremendous Harinam Kirtan which was coming through the doors leading into the arrival hall. The Kirtan could be clearly heard above all the airport noise and the public address announcements. Guru Kripa Swami and a large number of devotees were excitedly banging kartals, beating mridangas, and chanting so loudly that the airport officials had to move them away from the main greeting area, but still the sound drowned out everything else. With every opening and closing of the doors, the intense chanting boomed louder and then receded. The sounds of the holy names uplifted us, and when Srila Prabhupada heard it, he inquired innocently, "This is our men?" The airport security personnel were somewhat bewildered as to how to handle the situation. "Will they stop if he goes through?" the policeman asked. I assured him, "Yes, they will." And within seconds, Prabhupada was allowed to pass through, leaving Pushyakrishna and myself to wait for the bags. As Prabhupada disappeared through the door and was spotted by the devotees, the kirtan reached a terrific crescendo with loud shouts of, "Jai Prabhupada!" The noise stopped abruptly and Prabhupada was taken to the VIP lounge where the devotees had arranged a press conference. So that was nice. There was this huge greeting there in the airport. Nowadays I don't think that we do that, but in those days, wherever Prabhupada went, we always had huge kirtans right there in the airport, much to the consternation of the airport authorities, but there was not much that they could do. And in those days, security arrangements were, you know, by comparison to nowadays, were really, you know, kind of minimal. And you could get away with a lot of things. Now you couldn't do that, I don't think. They wouldn't allow you. But anyway, there was one last little drama, actually, when we went, after Prabhupada had gone through. So I was expecting that when I get the suitcases now, this, you know, customs official is going to give me problems, you know, because the policeman had basically chastised him and took Prabhupada straight through against his wishes. So when I got the suitcase, then I was sent to quarantine. You know, they wouldn't let me straight through. They said, "No, you go to quarantine." So I was thinking, now this is it. They're going to, you know, search everything, take everything out like this. But it was a different man from the one that I'd argued with. And this man had seen what was going on previously. So he actually turned out to be a really nice man. And he went out of his way to reassure me, "It's okay, you know, welcome to Australia. We want you to have a good time." Like this, and he was very polite. So anyway, he said, "This will just take a minute." So he unzipped Prabhupada's suitcase, and when he lifted up the lid, a cockroach about 2 inches long suddenly leapt out from the suitcase and started running around the counter. So all hell broke loose. Immediately this cockroach jumped out, the guy leapt back, and he said, he shouted out, "Quarantine! Quarantine!" like this. And there was one of these red flashing lights that you get, you know, on the top of the police cars and stuff, on a post right next to him with a big button. And he smacked this button, and then the red light starts flashing like this, and the klaxon goes off, and then the quarantine guys come running out, and they've got these big cans of spray. So they came running up, and then in the meantime, the customs guy, he took off his shoe, and then he got this cockroach, whack! He hits the cockroach and kills it on the counter. And then he grabs the 2 cans of spray from the quarantine guys. And then he stops and he smiles at me. He said, "Don't worry." He said, "This will just take a minute." And then he empties both these huge cans into Prabhupada's suitcase. And then he shuts the lid and, you know, zippers it up, smiles. He said, "Have a good stay." Gives me the suitcase back and I go through. So anyway, it was kind of funny. Anyway, the point was that there was a lot of chanting going on there at the airport. So similarly, when we left Melbourne, that was on the 26th, we'd been there about a week, as they had when Prabhupada arrived, the devotees gave him a rousing send-off, chanting and dancing all around him up to the aeroplane door. As he went down the escalators, so he was going down the down escalator, the devotees kept abreast of him by running down the up escalator. Right? Because they had one down and one up. So as Prabhupada was going down, the devotees ran down the one that was coming up. Prabhupada was laughing as they were doing it. And then at the aeroplane, he turned and waved to them all as he entered, flashing a brilliant smile to show his appreciation, causing everybody to jump and shout with happiness. So that was nice. Then from Melbourne, we flew into Auckland in New Zealand. So there was a 3.5 hour time difference and three hours traveling. So it was 10 o'clock at night when our Air New Zealand flight touched down in Auckland. There at the airport to greet Srila Prabhupada were 50 or 60 jubilantly chanting devotees with drums, kartals and guitars. It was quite a heterogeneous crowd. Most of them were from Tushtakrishnaswami's group. The local ISKCON temple has only about 12 members, men and women. On the way to the temple, cars and vans packed with excited devotees were speeding ahead and overtaking Prabhupada's car, with the devotees hanging out of the windows, waving and smiling and shouting, Jai Prabhupada, as they passed. So then we were there in New Zealand only a day and a half. Prabhupada did initiations, and he installed Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra, and Gaurnathai deities. And then on the 28th, then we left Auckland to fly to Fiji. So again, there was a big send-off at the airport. As we waited for our flight, Srila Prabhupada sat serenely and stately as the entire assembly of devotees settled into a large semicircle on the floor in front of him. An atmosphere of blissful tranquility seemed to envelop the gathering as everyone took a last darshan of his divine grace. Hari Ramadas, a former rock group member, now with Tushtakrishna, began to play his guitar and chant Hare Krishna to a gentle, lilting melody. Guru Kripa Swami began to play kartals softly as an accompaniment. Prabhupada, however, stopped him, allowing the boy to sing solo for a few minutes as he listened with obvious pleasure. Smiling broadly, Prabhupada gave him his garland. In this way, he encouraged Tushta's men to continue with their chanting, knowing that as long as they did this, even if they never agree to cooperate with ISKCON, they will continue to be purified and make spiritual advancement. He is their spiritual master, and he wants to keep them somehow connected. When the time came to depart, everyone followed his divine grace right to the boarding gate door, chanting all the way. And our plane departed for Nandi, Fiji, at 11 a.m. So that was in contrast to the, you know, big rousing kirtans that we've been having. Then we're all sat there, and then just this one boy was playing a guitar and began chanting. Everybody else listened, and Prabhupada liked it. And he stopped Guru Kripa even from playing the kartals so that this boy could, you know, play by himself. So another nice form of kirtan there. So that was Australia, New Zealand. Then the next really big reception was when Prabhupada flew from Hawaii and landed in Los Angeles, because Los Angeles was a big temple and devotees from all over the West Coast, San Diego, Laguna Beach, San Francisco and wherever else, they all came to see Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles. So on June the 1st then, we flew to Los Angeles from Honolulu. The flight to the West Coast took 4.5 hours. So with the time adjustment, it was 9 p.m. when we arrived at Los Angeles International Airport. Tamal Krishna, Ridayananda, Trivik Ram and Rameshwara Swamis. Oh, actually, I've missed a little bit out here. What happened was that when we arrived at the airport, the plane taxied in and then stopped. And then we were all sitting there waiting. And there was kind of waiting and waiting, and everybody was standing up and waiting to get off the plane. And then finally, there was an announcement before they opened the door. And they said, due to some problem in the airport, we have to divert you all. And now instead of going through the regular gate, when you go out through the, you know, the tunnel there, please turn right and go to the other gate. Like this. So everybody starts filing out. They didn't say what the reason was, just there was some problem. And then when Srila Prabhupada and myself and Pushta Krishna and Pradyumna joined the party by that time, when we came up, they said, no, not you. You go through the regular gate. So when we went out through the regular gate, there were 500 devotees in there, you know, packing up the whole airport. And that was why they had to divert all the other passengers, because nobody could get through. They were just packed with devotees. It was great. I just realized, actually, I forgot to put this in my diary. I should have put that bit in. Anyway, Tamal Krishna, Ridayananda, Trivik Ram, and Rameshwara Swamis, and Jagadish Prabhu greeted Srila Prabhupada, each bearing luxurious flower garlands of varying lengths, including one that reached down to his ankles. As they placed them around his neck, the rest of the devotees, out of spontaneous affection, erupted with sheer ecstasy to see him. The long walk down the passenger concourse was tumultuous, with devotees chanting and dancing with sublime abandon, jostling to catch a glimpse of the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord. As he travelled along the moving walkways, Srila Prabhupada appeared like the full moon crossing the night sky, surrounded by an entourage of bright stars, all gathered to pay homage to their Lord and Master. In reciprocation, he raised his hands high in the air, grinning broadly, his teeth flashing in the light. The devotees went wild with delight. The walls reverberated with the boom of drums and the clash of kartals, and the transcendental vibration of the holy names turned the ordinary airport fixtures and surroundings into Vaikuntha. It was the biggest reception LA Airport had ever seen, and Srila Prabhupada very humbly accepted the tremendous accolade with folded hands and greetings of Hare Krishna and Jai. So that was very nice. And then when we drove to the temple, the devotees had laid a red carpet out on from the entrance to the temple out to the edge of the curb there. So the car pulled up and Prabhupada stepped out onto the red carpet, and then he went up the carpet into the temple. And LA Temple, because it's got a very big like colonnades in the front, and there's actually a mezzanine floor, and the mezzanine floor has little windows that look out onto the street. So as Prabhupada came up the steps to go in, there were some of the ladies there with baskets of flower petals. And as Prabhupada came up, they began to throw flower petals. So it was like a blizzard of flower petals coming down on Prabhupada as he went in. And then he went underneath the mezzanine floor to come into the main temple room. And then on the other side, again, they were dropping flowers. So it was very nice. There was like carpets of flowers everywhere as Prabhupada came in. So it was very wonderful. So, because there were other places that we went to. Again, when we left Los Angeles, there were 300 devotees that escorted Prabhupada, chanting and dancing all the way to the gates. And when we went to all the other temples, Detroit and Toronto, etc., same, there were, you know, parties of devotees greeting him at the airport, but smaller, you know, maybe in some places only 20 or 30 devotees, but equally as enthusiastic. But the next really big reception was when Prabhupada came to New York. So we'd been in Washington, D.C., then we flew to New York, and we arrived at LaGuardia Airport on July the 9th at 10 a.m. to a fantastic reception, equal in enthusiasm, if not in scale, to his Los Angeles arrival. Tamal Krishna Goswami, Tripurari Swami, and Rameshwara Swami garlanded Prabhupada when he came off the plane, forming a saffron escort through the departure lounge. Then 200 devotees greeted him with unbounded enthusiasm, which required the presence of a special police contingent to disperse any congestion at the airport. So the police had to come especially just to try to, you know, keep the devotees in, you know, at least one section so that other passengers could get past. Hemangadas held a large, elaborately decorated ceremonial umbrella over Srila Prabhupada's head. The Bhakti Rasa theatre group danced all around Srila Prabhupada, and everyone else threw flowers and chanted Hare Krishna as Prabhupada made his way to the car, pausing only to answer a few questions from reporters. It was both colourful and exciting to watch his divine grace stride through the airport like a person returning home after a long absence, looking confident and happy and wreathed in multicoloured roses. So that was nice. This was exactly 10 years since Prabhupada had formed ISKCON in July of 1966. Now in July of 1976, Prabhupada was coming back to New York for a very special event, which was the very first New York Rathiatra. Because Prabhupada had started Rathiatra as soon as possible in San Francisco in 1967. And then that festival had spread very rapidly to various cities around the world. London and Paris and Melbourne and Philadelphia and Chicago and so many other places. But somehow or another, the first ISKCON temple, New York, had not yet had a Rathiatra. So Prabhupada was very keen for that. So finally they organized it. So we eventually did have this Rathiatra. I think it was on the 18th of July. And it was huge. It had three massive chariots that were built by Jayananda Prabhu. Jayananda actually was driving the car to pick Prabhupada up from the airport to take him to the temple. And it was also special because the devotees, a few months before, had purchased this 11-story building in Midtown Manhattan on West 55th Street. So it was very prestigious. We had this skyscraper building, and there were hundreds of devotees living in the temple. And then they had this wonderful Rathiatra with three chariots going down Fifth Avenue, which Prabhupada said was the most important street in the world. And we ended up at Washington Square Park, which of course was where Prabhupada used to go and chant Hare Krishna in 1966, Tompkins Square Park and Washington Square Park. So it was very, very wonderful, and Prabhupada said it was a dream come true for him to attend that Rathiatra. So that's a few airport receptions, chanting at the airport. Now, a little bit about the harmonium. That's another feature of kirtan. And I remember the first time that I saw Srila Prabhupada, that was in 1972 in Sydney in Australia. So he came for 1 week in April of 1972. And at that time I was still back to Harry. I got initiated on the 9th of April. So every morning, Prabhupada was going out for a morning walk in the Centennial Park in Sydney. And he was not staying at the temple. He was staying in another suburb, which was some distance away, in a house that one of the Grihasthas had vacated so that Prabhupada could have a whole house to himself and his party. So every morning, the temple van was going over to this house to pick up Srila Prabhupada to take him to the park for his morning walk. So each morning, the temple president, Mohanananda, he would pick four or five devotees who would be allowed to accompany Prabhupada on his morning walk. So one morning, it was my turn. So we jumped in the van and we drove around to the house where Prabhupada was staying. And then we had to wait for a little while because they said Prabhupada was not yet ready to come. So whilst we were standing on the street there waiting, then we heard this very beautiful melodious harmonium playing. And it was coming from the upstairs room of the house. And Srila Prabhupada was sitting and he just decided to, you know, sit down and play a couple of bhajans on the harmonium by himself. So we were waiting there and we could hear Srila Prabhupada playing and, you know, singing these bhajans. And then afterwards he came out and went on the morning walk. So that was my first direct experience of hearing Srila Prabhupada play the harmonium. Of course, we had cassette tapes by that time of Prabhupada, you know, playing bhajans, but it was very nice to hear him play live. So, as I say, Prabhupada's song tapes, they were distributed quite extensively around the movement. And let's see. Yeah, when we were in Tehran on August the 10th in 1976, I was giving Prabhupada his massage. And one of the devotees put one of Prabhupada's song tapes on the cassette player. So Prabhupada was sitting taking his massage and hearing himself playing the harmonium and singing bhajans. So as he was listening to that, he was smiling. And then he told me, he said that as a young man, he said, my friend's sister wanted to marry me because of my expertise at playing the harmonium. So he was like 13 or 14 years old. So this girl fell in love with him because he was an expert harmonium player. Prabhupada was laughing when he was hearing himself playing the harmonium there. So there was an opportunity actually that we also got to accompany Srila Prabhupada whilst he was playing the harmonium. That was in Hawaii on May the 12th. There were very few visitors. Evenings were very quiet. So one evening, Prabhupada, who normally would read or chant during the evening, so this particular night he decided that he wanted to play the harmonium. So there was one in the room. He went over and he sat down and he just started playing. So, you know, obviously we didn't want to miss that opportunity, myself and Pushta Krishna. So we both came into the room and sat behind Srila Prabhupada, just, you know, we were just eager to hear Srila Prabhupada play the harmonium. So Prabhupada was playing and then he looked over his shoulder and he saw myself and Pushta Krishna sitting behind him. So he said, so, Madunga and Kartals. So we immediately got the instruments. I played the Kartals, Pushta Krishna played the Madunga. And then Prabhupada sang the Das Avatar prayers. So it's very nice for about 20 minutes. And then we also recorded it. So that was a good opportunity. And there was another opportunity that we had also to play along with Srila Prabhupada. That was later in the year when we got back to Vrindavan. So Hansaduda Maharaj was there. And a couple of years before, he had recorded Srila Prabhupada, if I'm not mistaken, he recorded him singing some bhajans in Germany. And then they had made some record albums from those bhajans, Krishna meditations and songs to the spiritual master. And the devotees used to go out and sell those records on the street. For those of you that are young, you may not remember the old records. I don't know whether you have them still here in Slovenia. Nowadays it's all CDs. But in those days we used to have these big records about this big. And, you know, maybe get 10 or 12 songs on each side of the album. So the devotees used to sell those out on the street. Prabhupada, you know, singing bhajans. It was nice. So Hazaduda got the idea that it would be nice to get Srila Prabhupada, you know, to sing some more bhajans and record those, and he would make another record with it. So Prabhupada agreed, but actually at that time he was suffering from very high blood pressure, and it was so bad that one or two mornings he actually didn't give the Bhagavatam class because the pressure in his head was too much and he couldn't, you know, it was difficult for him to speak. But despite that, then he agreed that he would do this recording. So we did do one session actually. In Prabhupada's bedroom, Hansaduda set up a couple of microphones. He had a big Ua reel-to-reel recorder. And Prabhupada played the harmonium. And I think I played the Kartals. And I think Hari Kesh was playing the drum. So we did a recording session in Prabhupada's bedroom. But then the next day when Hansaduda came back again, Prabhupada declined because he said it was too much strain on him. So that was a couple of occasions when we got a chance to accompany Srila Prabhupada as he played the harmonium. Other occasions, that I can remember playing the harmonium. When we went to Los Angeles, then this devotee, Jai Satchinandan Das, who was a noted kirtan leader in ISKCON at that time, he had learnt Bengali also, and he could speak with a very nice Bengali accent, although he's an American, and he had a very, very good singing voice. So what he had done, he had taken the original poems that Prabhupada wrote when he had arrived in America, when he was on the boat at Boston Pier. He'd written these poems, Markine Bhagavat Dharma, and another poem which later on Prabhupada named A Prayer to the Lotus Feet of Krishna. So they were written in Bengali, and Jai Satchinandan had translated those into English. And he had sent them to Srila Prabhupada for his approval. And Prabhupada said, yes, these should be included in the songbook so that all the devotees can learn to sing them. So then apart from that, when we arrived in Los Angeles, then on the 4th of June, then in the early evening, Jai Satchinandan came up into Prabhupada's room and sang this prayer, Markine Bhagavat Dharma, that Prabhupada had written for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada in his darshan room. So he played the harmonium, and we accompanied him with kartals and mridanga while Srila Prabhupada sat and listened. Jai Satchinandan sings just like a Bengali kirtaniya, very melodiously and with all the right accents. Srila Prabhupada liked his rendition of his poem, but he declined to sing it himself, preferring to hear his disciple. He was pleased to hear that Jai Satchinandan has learnt Bengali, and he requested him to start a Bengali BTG with Jagannath Das. And in fact, he did later on travel to Mayapur and help to start up the Bengali BTG there. So that was nice. Then there was another session that we had, recording with Prabhupada, in what was called the Golden Avatar Studios. So before going to Los Angeles in June, on April the 6th, Srila Prabhupada had received a letter from a devotee called Krishnakanti Das, who was he was a sound engineer, actually. So he informed His Divine Grace about a professional recording studio called Golden Avatar that he had just established in Los Angeles. His aim is to produce first-class Krishna-conscious recordings. He enclosed a stereo cassette with the first record album to be recorded entirely within the studio in its first 10 days of operation. He also offered to record Srila Prabhupada when he comes to Los Angeles in the summer. He especially wants to make a recording of Srila Prabhupada chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, since the only other professional recording of him doing this is still owned by Alan Coleman. Alan Coleman was the man who had recorded Srila Prabhupada in 1966, and that became known as the Happening album. And that was sold. You know, it's kind of, he had his own small little recording studio. And of course, the description of Prabhupada recording there is given in the Lilamrita. And that Happening album was the first chanting of Hare Krishna that George Harrison and the Beatles heard when they were in Europe. So it got some circulation, kind of like it was like an underground special, if you like. So that got circulated. So that was the only professional recording that we had, and it was still owned by Alan Coleman. So Krishnakanti wanted to record Prabhupada in the studio chanting Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada listened with great satisfaction to the tape that Krishnakanti had sent. It was called Hare Krishna Festival, and it had a new marching band version of the Maha Mantra. So, you know, like drum, big bass drums, trombones, trumpets, you know, the whole marching band thing, cymbals. And he had used a whole band, marching band, and recorded this version of Hare Krishna in like this kind of marching band tune. And Prabhupada liked it very much. He wrote back encouraging Krishnakanti in his work. I very much like the chanting on this tape. It is very excellent and it should be popularized and it will be a great success. Introduce this into every home and it will help them. And if they read our books, then finished. No more material life. Yes, when I come, I also can make a tape of chanting Hare Krishna. But the chanting of Hare Krishna by the other boys on this tape is very nice. Thank you. And actually, that was another form of kirtan that, you know, Prabhupada recommended, marching bands. When we had the Melbourne Rath Yatra, I think in 1973, we had three chariots, and Prabhupada wrote to Madhavita Swami. He said, yes, very nice, and you should have a marching band also in front of the parade. So we actually got like a Scots bagpipe band, and they were marching in front of the chariots, and we got this tune, and the marching band was playing this Hare Krishna tune as they were marching in front of the Rath carts. It was very, very nice, and people loved it. The Prabhupada liked that. He liked marching bands. Probably had seen them when he was young with the British Raj when they were in India. They used to have their soldiers marching up and down in the city, so he probably saw that and liked it. So anyway, that was in April. Then in June, when we arrived in Los Angeles, on June the 6th, then Prabhupada actually went to visit the Golden Avatar, Avatar production studio at 10 a.m. in the morning. It was just a few blocks from the temple. Krishna Kanti Das has a recording studio and $30,000 worth of equipment. They pay for it by leasing it out to the Karmis a few times a week at the rate of $20 per hour. So after inspecting the control room, Srila Prabhupada sat down behind a microphone to sing. I had suggested to Krishnakanti that he should ask Srila Prabhupada to sing his own poem, Makine Bhagavat Dharma. But Krishnakanti wasn't interested. He requested Prabhupada to sing the Maha Mantra because there was no recording of his divine grace, which ISKCON actually owns. So I thought that was an opportunity that was lost, because Prabhupada was there. He was willing to sing anything that, you know, Krishnakanti asked him. We had no recording of Srila Prabhupada singing his own poem that he wrote when he arrived in America. And this was a golden opportunity. You know, Jai Satchinandan had just set it to music. And, Prabhupada had been asked, I'm sure he would have sung it. But Krishnakanti just was not interested. He was fixated on getting Prabhupada to chant the Hare Krishna mantra, which we already had many recordings. You know, just not a professional one. Anyway, so Prabhupada did it, and we missed the chance. So Prabhupada happily obliged and chanted Hare Krishna while playing the harmonium. After that, he sang one of his favorite bhajans, Gaurangara Dutipada. Wearing his black rimmed spectacles, his face reflecting a deep intensity of devotion, he pumped the harmonium with his left hand and dexterously depressed the keyboard with his right. Producing a wonderful melody of notes in accompaniment, his sonorous voice resonated the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, as it happened, we didn't finish the recording that particular morning. There was still some other stuff to do, and time ran out. Prabhupada had other appointments. So he agreed to come back again on the 8th of June. So again, we returned there to finish this recording of Gaurangara Dutipada. Prabhupada again played the harmonium, and then he wanted the mridanga as an accompaniment, but nobody could play it properly. Pushta Krishna tried, he couldn't get the beat. I think Bharadraj was there, he couldn't get the beat. So finally, Srila Prabhupada played the mridanga himself. So he was listening to the track, you know, with him singing, with the harmonium. And then on another track, they recorded Prabhupada playing the mridanga. So he was listening to that and then accompanying himself on the mridanga. Nalini Kantadas sat next to him, holding the songbook as he played, and Yadavara Prabhu filmed the event. Both Bharadvaj and Pushta Krishna tried to play the mridanga, but neither of them could get the beat. So Prabhupada provided the accompaniment himself. We were amazed at his expertise, because he has not played in several years. He sat back with the drum on his lap. Pointing to it laughingly, he said that his father had wanted him to learn this. He never wanted me to be a worldly man, he smiled. And that's actually on the film there, if you've seen that film. It's nice, Prabhupada sitting back, very relaxed. He said actually his mother wanted him to go to London to become a lawyer, because that was, you know, the kind of in thing at that time for young Indians to get a British education. And of course Prabhupada had gone to Scottish Church's College. And that was his mother's idea, that if he becomes a lawyer, then he'll have a respectable position and he'll, you know, have a good income. Because, of course, he was going to get married. That was the intention. But Prabhupada's father refused, because he said if he goes to London, he'll become spoiled like these Westerners. So he said, my father, all he wanted, that I'd become expert at playing the mridanga and, you know, and the harmonium. So he liked that. He just wanted Prabhupada to become a devotee. That was all his own interest. So anyway, so that was a couple of occasions Prabhupada playing the harmonium. Let's see what else there is here. I already mentioned about the harmonium, this letter from Baudek that he wrote in January 76, where Prabhupada very specifically says the harmonium is for bhajan, but not for kirtan and arati. And I put that note there that the harmonium actually is a recent invention. It was invented in 1830 something or other by some Frenchman, actually. But it became popular, so we do use it, but not for kirtan and arati, as Prabhupada said. Let's see anything else here. Okay, one other occasion when we heard Prabhupada playing his harmonium. We were in New Mayapur in France. This was August the 3rd. So Prabhupada actually, he had gone there from London, but when he was in London, he was very, very sick. He had kind of got a heavy cold, almost like a flu, in New York, just on the last couple of days that we were there. Again, he did this big initiation, about 200 devotees, and the next day he got very sick. So the GBC asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, please don't travel until you get your health back. Stay in New York and, you know, get over this cold. Because even the airlines advise you, if you have a heavy cold, don't fly. Because what happens is all the mucus, the pressure, with all the mucus in your system, it blocks you up and you can actually damage your sinuses and your eardrums and everything. Because you can't unblock your ears, you know, when the plane's coming down, and you can actually damage them. And it makes you very dizzy also, and tendency is, you know, that you throw up. But Prabhupada said, no, you know, they've arranged programs, so I should go. So he went, and flying overnight, it was a really, really difficult flight for Srila Prabhupada. He was lying down the whole time, and he was kind of basically coughing up this thick yellow mucus the whole night long, every few minutes. And when we arrived in London, he actually asked us to get him a wheelchair to take him from the aircraft, you know, through the customs. Because we landed in Heathrow, and Heathrow Airport, they have these very, very long corridors, you know, miles of corridors. So we tried to get a wheelchair, but Srila Prabhupada just wanted to get off the aircraft. So he didn't want to wait until they brought it to the aircraft, and he started walking. So we got about 100 meters or so down the corridor, and then Gurudas Maharaj, who was with us and had gone to try to get the wheelchair, he came and he told Prabhupada that we've got the wheelchair, but they'll only bring it to the aircraft. They won't bring it down, you know, the corridor here. So we have to go back to the aircraft. But Prabhupada refused. He wouldn't turn around and go back. There's a thing in India that if you set off on a journey, then you don't turn around and go back. It's very inauspicious, and it means that something will happen in the journey. So when Prabhupada set off on a journey, that was it. You keep going to the destination. You don't go back. Whether that was the reason why he wouldn't turn around and go back or not, I don't know. But he just wouldn't go back there and kept on walking. And he was so sick that he was actually swaying from side to side as he was walking down the corridor. I think he was like really, really dizzy from the flight. And he would stop every 50 meters or so just to kind of steady himself. And, you know, he was very weak, so just to get his strength up. The airport authorities actually sent two policemen. They kind of alerted them that there may be a problem here. So two police officers walked behind us, you know, at a, like a respectful distance, about 5 meters behind, just in case there was any problem. But somehow or another, we did make it through customs and immigration. And then immediately, you know, the devotees there were there to greet Prabhupada. But I told Jayatirtha, who was the GBC at that time, Prabhupada's really sick. We should just get the car, get in it, and go straight to the manor. So we did that. And actually, on the way to the manor, we had to stop twice for Srila Prabhupada because he threw up whilst we were driving there. So he was very sick, and he had initially decided when we arrived in London that he was in bed for 3 days, practically. So he told Harry Case that now, you know, just change the tickets, we'll fly straight back to Bombay. Because, you know, this weather is not good for me. Even though it was midsummer, it was July, because England, you know, they don't really have a summer. So it was cold in the mornings. And Prabhupada was, you know, he was telling us, you make sure that I don't get chilled. He said, it's very dangerous. You know, on a, when you're old, your blood becomes a little thinner and it turns to mucus very easily. So he said, you have to make sure that I don't get cold. So anyway, he wanted to fly back to Bombay, but then we couldn't get any bookings. Then Bhagavan Prabhu came, he was the GBC for France at that time. And he persuaded Srila Prabhupada that actually in France, the weather's very nice, it's very warm. You know, we'll make sure that nothing happens, you'll be well looked after. We have a very comfortable place for you. You know, very comfortable car to take you to New Mayapur, like this. So then, by gently persuading Srila Prabhupada, then Prabhupada agreed to, you know, to keep the schedule and go to France. So when we went to France, then instead of walking in the mornings, because he was sick, Prabhupada was taking a little extra rest. And then he decided that he would go out in the afternoons, because it was actually really good weather. It's very warm and sunny. So he would go for a walk in the afternoon, and he had a look around, you know, the property and everything. And then he started to, you know, go over to this grassy area and sit down in the grass, and then the devotees would come and gather around. And then we would have this very nice open-air darshan with Prabhupada kind of, you know, sitting in the middle there in the grass. It's like the cowherd boys sitting around Krishna in Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada would speak a little bit on Bhagavad Gita or you know, whatever, some topic. So anyway, one particular day, August the 3rd, Prabhupada has made his evening walk a regular event. At about 6 p.m. he went downstairs. More and more devotees are arriving from temples all across Europe. And a large crowd was waiting with great anticipation to join him at the main entrance. As Prabhupada walked with his entourage through the garden, loudspeakers in the near vicinity were broadcasting one of his bhajans from a central system in the chateau. So it was nice. They had the recorder in the chateau, but they had speakers all around the grounds. So wherever you went in New Mayapur, you would hear Prabhupada chanting. As Prabhupada prepared to sit down on the broad grass verge, one of the devotees commented how beautiful his singing on the tape was. Prabhupada stopped and listened for a moment to himself singing and playing the harmonium. Then smiling, he said objectively, Narottam Das Thakur has said that this voice does not belong to this universe. The devotees cheered, Hari Bol! And Prabhupada added, that is the secret. It is imported from the spiritual world. Golokera Premadana Harinama Sankirtana. Golokera, it is coming from Goloka Vrindavan. So of course Prabhupada meant, you know, the song is coming. Harinam, the kirtan, the name is coming from Goloka Vrindavan. But all the devotees took it that Prabhupada's singing is coming from Goloka Vrindavan. And actually it was. Because as we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita, a pure devotee lives simultaneously in both the spiritual and the material worlds. He's aware of both platforms. So Prabhupada's singing was actually coming directly from the spiritual platform. Anyway, it was nice. Prabhupada was just very humble, but very objective about it. So then, that's harmoniums. Another form of kirtan is one that we listen to and sing along with every morning, the Govindam prayers. So this was made, that record was made probably in about 1970 or something, I think, after the devotees had moved to London. Then they got to know George Harrison. George was already interested in Krishna consciousness. And he formed a very close relationship with Shyamasundara and Mukunda Prabhus and Gurudas. And he was very, very keen to have the devotees record the Hare Krishna mantra. So, you know, they had their own recording studio, Apple Studios. And so he said, we have to get this on, you know, record and, you know, sell it as much as we can. So they did that. And actually the Hare Krishna mantra became one of the top-selling records in Europe. In England, it got into the top 10. In several countries in Europe, it became number one in the record charts. It spread all over the place. It was like, you know, unexpectedly successful. And then they made this Radha Krishna Temple album. So that included this song, you know, the Brahma Samhita prayers, two of the prayers, Govindam Adi Purusham. So Prabhupada was sent a copy of that, and he liked it so much that he said, now this can be played every morning when we greet the deities. So that's become, you know, one of the main ISKCON traditions, that we always listen to the Govindam prayers, or if we don't have the record, we sing them whenever we greet the deities in every temple in the movement. So on December the 12th, 1975, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and he got a letter from Jai Sachinandan Das in Los Angeles. So he had written on group on behalf of a group of brahmacharis, and he said, in every ISKCON temple in the world, the assembled devotees offer their obeisances to the deities in the morning as the Govindam prayers loudly play. George Harrison had recorded it, and Jamuna Dasi sings the mantras. She had the lead singer. So disturbed by this custom, Jai Sachinandan quoted Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as well as Srila Prabhupada himself, that if a brahmachari hears and is attracted to a woman singing, it is a subtle fall down. So in the light of this, he wrote, many of the brahmacharis approached the temple president to see if it would be possible that when the deities are greeted in the morning, that instead of listening to Gurudas Maharaj's former wife singing the Brahma Samhita prayers, we could listen to your divine grace rather than hear a woman sing. He did not want to change the tape because it had been a standard in ISKCON since 1970. So, requested by many devotees, I am inquiring from your divine grace if we could play a tape recording of you singing instead of a woman when the deities of Rukmini Dwarkadish are greeted in the morning. I am sure that all the devotees would be enlivened to hear you instead of electric guitars, the London Symphonic Orchestra, etc., etc. Srila Prabhupada was not pleased. He said that constantly changing things is our Western disease. His reply was short and direct. No, you have made some discovery. All along you have been hearing the recording of Jamuna Dasi, and now you want to change. It is not ordinary singing, it is concert. Many people are singing, so it is not bad. Just like Sankirtan, many voices are there, men and women. So it is the same thing, Sankirtan. I approve of it. Here in the Krishna Balaram temple, we are hearing the same recording every morning. So if it is good here, then why not there? So that was it. So we still listen to the Govindam prayers. So, and of course we mentioned there that George Harrison produced that album. He also played on it. I think he plays the sitar actually on the Govindam prayers. And George actually did come to see Srila Prabhupada when he visited Bhaktivedanta Manor in July of 76. So on the 26th, Prabhupada was just gradually getting over his illness. He'd been there a couple of days and, you know, he was just gradually getting a little better. But when George came to see him, Prabhupada actually was still in bed. Now normally when Prabhupada was asleep, there was a standing rule that he was not to be awoken for any reason whatsoever. It didn't matter who came in. But Prabhupada told us that if I'm asleep when George comes, you wake me up. So George came, maybe about 2 in the afternoon. So I went into Prabhupada's bedroom and, you know, gently woke him up. And I said, George is here. So then I expected that Prabhupada would get out of bed and go into the darshan room and receive him there, because the devotees had cooked a feast also for him. And, you know, they were going to feed him. But Prabhupada said, bring him into the bedroom. So he just sat up in the bed. George came in, and then we had some seats put down and some small tables. And Prabhupada said, now feed him prasadam. So Gurudas was there, Mukunda was there, Jaitirtha was there, and a few other leading devotees. So everybody sat down, and then we served them prasadam right there in Prabhupada's bedroom, as Prabhupada sat in bed and began to chat with George. So it was very nice. So having been informed of Srila Prabhupada's illness, George inquired, how do you feel? Prabhupada smiled. I have old man's disease, cough and cold. So, coughing. But still, work is going on, and I shall complete 80 years this month, September 81. So now, due to age, it is becoming a little difficult. Then Prabhupada asked George how he was, and if he was still chanting. George said that he was, and Prabhupada replied, thank you. That is our life and soul. Grihe va vanite tako, hagoranga bole dako. Wherever you live, it doesn't matter. Chant Hare Krishna. That's all. That is our only support. George complimented Srila Prabhupada that he was pleased to see that his disciples were looking healthy and strong. Prabhupada chuckled. Yes, phalena parichiyate. By the result, one has to study. Yesterday, one devotee's father and mother came, Hari Soris. She and his father were very pleased to see him, healthy and bright. So we are inviting everyone. Come here. Such a nice house has been given by George. So you live here comfortably, eat nicely, and chant Hare Krishna. We don't want any factory work. Prabhupada laughed. Simply kartal and mridanga. Still people do not come. They'll prefer to go to the factory all day and work in hell. I suppose someday the whole of the world will be just chanting in the country, George mused. That is not possible, Prabhupada said. But if some of the leading men, if they take it seriously, then others will follow. Just like in our book, your signature is there. Oh, George Harrison, yes. So they take it without any consideration, means the Krishna book. Yad yad acharati shrestas tat tat eva taro janaha. If the leading man does something, then his followers also do. So this is the way. So if some of the leading men of the world, they take this movement seriously, then people will be happy, and there is no doubt about it. And Prabhupada actually did compliment George as well, that because you're chanting, so many thousands of people are chanting. George was very modest, and he said, well, I don't think it's on account of me. But Prabhupada said, no, no, they say, George chants. Do they not? Like that. So Prabhupada was appreciating his enthusiasm for chanting and the fact that, you know, he had taken it upon himself to spread the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. And there's actually a new biography of George that's going to come out very shortly, which has been written by our godbrother, Yogeshwara Prabhu. What did he call it? A Soul Named George. And it's about the spiritual life of George Harrison. And he quotes George there, that at one point George said that, you know, when he realized the importance of chanting, then, you know, he felt, well, it should be, you know, somebody has to spread this all over the world. So he thought, well, you know, why just talk? I should do something myself. So he said, then I just thought, well, I may as well do it. So he actually took it up as a mission to chant Hare Krishna and introduce as many people to it as possible. So all things must pass, and then living in the material world, all these albums, practically all the lyrics are about, you know, Krishna consciousness and glorifying Krishna. So it was very nice. He had a very, very big impact, actually, George Harrison. So, okay. That's a few things about Kirtan. Corrections in Kirtan. Sometimes Prabhupada corrected people, as I pointed out about the Bhaja Hare Krishna. So there was another one that happened to me, actually. One time I was chanting in Vrindavan when I was the temple commander before I became Prabhupada's servant. That was when in September of 75 when he was visiting for Janmashtami. So at midday I was leading the kirtan, singing over the microphone. So I was singing the lead, and then I was also singing the refrain, because there was hardly any devotees there, so I was singing both, you know, the lead and the refrain. So as I was doing that, then Upendra came out and into the temple room, and he said, Prabhupada says you have to stop. He said, only sing the lead part, don't sing the refrain. So he didn't like that, that, you know, continuously over the microphones, you know. All right, sing the lead part and then give everybody a break. Let everybody else sing the refrain, but don't sing it over the microphone. He didn't like that. Too much microphone. Too disturbing. Then a year later, on April the 9th, 1976, when I was Prabhupada's servant, then on Ram Naomi, just at midday, some devotees were singing over the microphone a mantra glorifying Sitaram. Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram Patita Pavana Sitaram. They were also chanting some other mantras. Srila Prabhupada sent me into the temple with a message that they should stop. He wanted them to simply chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, since it automatically includes Lord Ram. He said that other mantras are not necessary. So I stopped them. Prabhupada did not like this mantra, Raghupati Raghava Rajaram, because it's actually not a bona fide mantra. It was invented by Mahatma Gandhi. And of course, we all know what Prabhupada thought about Mahatma Gandhi, that he was not actually a devotee. You know, he was a mental speculator. So Prabhupada did not like this mantra. I know our devotees, every Ram Naomi, they sit down and they get into singing this mantra, but it's not bona fide. Again, it's the same principle. This actually should have been in the other section. It's the same principle. It is the names of the Lord, but because it's not given by the Acharyas, then it doesn't have the same effect. It's Guru Ravagya. So that's a couple of things about chanting there on the microphones. Any questions up to this point? Yes, Brian.
Some new books that is come out recently. There is this mantra. So the devotee, they do not know.
A new songbook?
Yes.
Somebody put it in one of our songbooks? I don't know. Somebody should tell them. As far as I'm aware, it was an invention of Mahatma Gandhi's. I mean, I stand to be corrected. I haven't researched it, but I was told that. So why they're putting it in our songbooks, I don't know.
But it's not it's a big one, you know, that it's come out after the... it's a more song. It continued the little one.
Who published it? Some private publication or BBT or
Gita Nagari?
I don't know. I'll have a look at that and maybe I'll write to them. Somebody had a question there somewhere? No? Didn't you have your hand up there, Mataji? No? All right. Yes.
What about singing Nitai Gauranga?
Nitai Gauranga.
Yeah.
We already discussed that the other night. We already discussed that, didn't we, the other night? You weren't here when we talked about that? You were here?
Yeah.
So why are you asking me now then? What's the question?
It was Nitai Go.
Same thing, Nitai Gauranga, Nitai Go. Yeah. Same thing. If it's the name of the deity, that's all right. But, you know, this go, you know, Nitai Gauranga Ball, Harry Ball, you know, that business, that's... Actually, that song was popularized in ISKCON by Vishnu Janaswamy. He was, you know, one of the leading kirtan men in ISKCON in the early 70s. And he had gone to India, and he heard some of the Sahaja groups singing that and picked it up from them and made a recording of it. And that went all around the movement, and then everybody started singing it. I don't know what Prabhupada's comment was specifically about him, but when Lokanath was singing it with his group, he stopped him. So he didn't particularly like that. It's not, again, it's not one of our mantras.
What about, I heard Prabhupada sing Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya.
Yes, actually I'd forgotten to put that in this seminar, but I will include it because we always used to sing Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda. But after the Chaitanya Charitamrita was published, that came out in 75, then I don't know exactly how the discussion came up, but in 77, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, this was like in May, June, some discussion came up about, you know, singing Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya. And Prabhupada said, well, actually, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the mantra is Jaya Shri Krishna. So he said, so you can change that. So then he told us to change it to Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Jaya Advaita. And we used to sing Shri Advaita. Sometimes devotees still do that, but Prabhupada said to change it to Jai, because it's more in line with what's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But I don't know the, you know, as I said, the context of how that discussion came up. But I do know, and I remember it very clearly, Prabhupada making that change from Bhaja Shri Krishna to Jaya Shri Krishna. So it's a technical thing, but still, you know, it's there. That Prabhupada wanted to keep it, you know, properly in line with the Shastra. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are some bhajans that glorify Radharani. The question is, can we sing Radharani's name more often on Radhastami? You are glorifying Radharani by singing Hare Krishna. Radharani is Hare. That's the whole point. As far as Prabhupada was concerned, everybody is included when you chant Hare Krishna mantra. And, you know, we are the Hare Krishna movement. You know, we're not the Radha Krishna movement, or, you know, the Harry Bowl movement, or, you know, we're the Hare Krishna movement. That's what we are. When Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, you know, we'd go on morning walks, and of course, most people in Vrindavan, they always, when they greet each other, they say, Jai Radhe. And Prabhupada, you know, has from time to time complimented them, the residents of Vrindavan. You know, they know that you can't approach Krishna except through Radharani, and therefore they say Jai Radhe when they see each other. So everybody's aware of that. But whenever Prabhupada was greeted by Jai Radhe, or by anything, he would always say Hare Krishna. I never heard Prabhupada say Jai Radhe, only Hare Krishna. So that was Prabhupada's preference. That is the mood that Prabhupada established for ISKCON. And we don't like to get, you know, diverted to other things. So a little bit, you know, right around his appearance day, you can sing something. You know, there's several bhajans, nice bhajans, glorifying Srimati Radharani. But don't overdo it, that's all. In the early days, Prabhupada actually told the devotees not to sing Radhe, because he said it's too intimate. And we can sing Radha, but not Radhe. Yeah, it's just a more intimate form of address, and Prabhupada told the devotees, no, you shouldn't do that. We do a little bit. And Prabhupada did hear devotees do it, and he didn't stop them. But if you do it to excess, then it, you know, it's not Prabhupada's standard. It's not his mood. I know there are some devotees that have lived in Vrindavan for some time, and they like to popularize some of these, you know, so-called bridge bassy tunes and things. My own personal feeling about that is that Prabhupada would not tolerate that. He would not allow the devotees to, you know, burst into these other tunes and songs that they picked up from the, you know, bridge basses. Not all of them are bona fide anyway. But it's just not the standard that he set in ISKCON. He had a particular mood, and it's up to us to, you know, adopt that mood. Any other questions? Yeah.
Was Srila Prabhupada ever allowed that Mataji's leaked the kirtan?
Sometimes, yeah. It didn't happen very often, but he did, you know. I remember when he came in 72, there was Jagatarini. She was actually, she had been a movie, up-and-coming movie star in Australia before she became a devotee. She had had some contact with the devotees, but, you know, she was trying to break into, you know, the film star thing. And she was actually picked to play opposite Mick Jagger in a film about an Australian bandit, Ned Kelly. So Mick Jagger was there filming, and she was playing opposite him as his girlfriend. So with those credentials, then, you know, she knew the devotees, but she was naturally wanting to follow her, you know, path to stardom. So she moved to Los Angeles to try to break into Hollywood there. But then after some time, it, you know, didn't work out. She met the devotees in L.A., and so she joined in L.A. Then there was this devotee, Burijan, who had gone off to Hong Kong to, you know, start preaching there. And he was all there. He was there all by himself. So one day, Prabhupada called Jagatarini in, and he told her, this, you know, devotee Burijan's in Hong Kong. I want you to go there and marry him. Right? To give him association. So immediately she flew to Hong Kong and they got married. Never met the guy before, you know. And of course, somehow or another, fortunately, they're still married after all these years. But she went there. So then, you know, but it was tough in Hong Kong. And for some reason or another, Prabhupada said the Chinese are the most difficult people to make devotees. You know, very, very materialistic culture. But he said once they become devotees, then they'll stick. But anyway, in those days, it was very tough. So when Prabhupada came to Sydney in 1972, Burijan and Jagatarini, I think just Jagatarini, flew over from Hong Kong, you know, just to get some association with the devotees and with Prabhupada. So in the evening arati, Nanda Kumar, I think, he was the servant, he was just about to start singing, and Prabhupada said, no, let Jagatarini sing. So he had her lead the evening kirtan. And I remember a few of the older devotees, they were a little surprised that Prabhupada's letting this woman lead the kirtan. But, he, you know, Prabhupada did it. It was to encourage her, you know, just to kind of give her the family feeling and, you know, give her a little bit of spiritual boost. That's the only time I can remember with Prabhupada that, you know, a lady was leading kirtan. I do remember in Sydney sometimes there was a devotee, Krishna Premi, little Australian lady. She was married to a Swedish devotee, Ajit. So sometimes she would lead the kirtan. But that became a little controversial. And eventually the temple authorities heavied her out and stopped her from doing it. But as far as Prabhupada was concerned, he didn't have any problems. And you'll see in the early days in India, when he was traveling around with Jamuna and Kaushalya and Malati and, you know, these ladies, he had them not just lead kirtans in big pandals, he had them speak also, you know, and give lectures. So Prabhupada didn't really have a problem with that. But generally speaking, you know, because of the reservations when you have brahmacharis and sannyasis, that was a bit inhibiting for ladies to lead kirtan. You know, for the same reasons that Jai Satchinandan was quoting there about the Govinda album. So that was, you know, the main consideration. And if the ladies led, you know, generally it was just when there was only women there or something. In India, you still see bhajan groups just ladies or just men. Nowadays it's becoming more mixed up, but you know, there was a standard at one time. So on the whole, I don't think it's a problem. I was just in Alachua. Sometimes the ladies lead Guru Puja and things like that there. And it doesn't seem to be, you know, any kind of major difficulty there. But then there are hardly any brahmacharis in that temple either. You know, there's about 1,000 devotees and most of them are married. The danger is that if it becomes, you know, more like a material thing, you know, and a woman's leading, if men get involved then, you know, I mean, like when we have kirtans, sometimes it gets quite intense. And I think that is a problem, that if, you know, ladies leading and then the men, you know, and there's mixing between men and women. Prabhupada definitely didn't want that mixing. So as long as the men and women are, you know, a little separate, that's okay. I don't think it's a problem. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhupada. I never addressed Srila Prabhupada as Jaya Prabhupada. You know, in pronunciation in Sanskrit and Hindi, generally if there's an A on the end, it's left off. So although we say Arjuna, in India you'll hear most people, they'll say Arjun. Although Prabhupada sometimes said Arjuna. But with Srila Prabhupada, we just never called him Prabhupada, you know. So in the kirtan sometimes devotees do that. I guess it's like a musical effect or something. Personally, I never sing Jaya Prabhupada. I only sing Jaya Prabhupada. It's a personal preference because I never, when I spoke with Prabhupada, you know, ever called him Prabhupada. I always called him Srila Prabhupada. So... Yes, Prabhu.
Which principles of devotional service can we consider according to time, place, and circumstances? And which principles, which category, don't change? What's the criteria?
Which principles of devotional service apply in all circumstances and which can be changed? Time can be adjusted. That's a very big discussion, which I don't think that we have time for here. Let's go on with a few more things from chanting, because it's already 10 o'clock. We'll do a couple of other things here. About the effects of chanting. I'll do a couple of things on the effects of chanting, and then I'll do a couple of things on how chanting saves you from death. Yeah. So, on the effects of chanting, on March the 30th, 1976, Prabhupada had visited Aligarh, which is just nearby to Vrindavan. We were just doing a one-night program there, big Pandal program. About 7,000 people turned up for it, so it was very nice. The devotees had already been chanting for a half hour when Srila Prabhupada arrived, and the audience was very eager to hear him. Clearly, it was a special event for them to see so many Westerners chanting and dancing and to meet the personality who had inspired them to do so. Of course, this was right in the middle of the Mayapur festival, so there were actually a couple of hundred devotees at this program. So, you know, the Indian people had never seen so many Western Vaishnavas in one place. So it was kind of, you know, very attractive. Prabhupada was given a vote of thanks by the head of the nearby Ram Tirtha Mission, who had helped organize the pandal in just a few days' notice. Srila Prabhupada was noticeably pleased with the program, and he gave a splendid lecture about the value of chanting Hare Krishna. He quoted a statement from Shastra that there was no amount of sin that cannot be eradicated by the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. So that was one little reference about that. Later on, in November 14th, 1976, we were in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was giving a class, and he quoted from Lochan Das Thakur telling us that the chanting of the Lord's name was the potent remedy for all of our problems. Vishaya, Charya, Sairase, Majya, Mukhe Bolo, Hari Hari. This is the instruction that we can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we can chant the holy name of the Lord purely without offense. Because if we chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra once only, if it is pure, then immediately you become liberated. Hari Nam is so powerful that once chanting immediately vanquishes accumulated sinful reactions of millions of lives. But Hari Nam is so expert that once chanted, the papi, the sinful man, will be a failure to commit sin anymore. It's nice how Prabhupada phrased that. The Hari Nam is so expert. That means Prabhupada realized that the holy name is Krishna himself. Krishna is so expert. However, he cautioned us that chanting is not a cheap process. But the difficulty is that we cannot come to the stage of pure chanting Hare Krishna mantra. Due to our past habits, our mind is disturbed. We cannot concentrate. Therefore, we have fixed up the minimum, he said. We cannot imitate Haridas Thakur. That is not possible. If somebody imitates Haridas Thakur, then we can see this chanting Hare Krishna and smoking bidis. So we can understand what is the position. The offense is going on. Therefore, we should try to avoid the 10 kinds of offenses. Of course, in the beginning, the offenses will continue. But chanting, 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 chanting. As soon as we become purified, Chaito Darpanamajanam, Bhavamaha Devaginiya Nivarpanam. By chanting, chanting, chanting repeatedly, the core of the heart will be cleansed. So, at the beginning of 1977, Rameshwara Swami came and he was Prabhupada's secretary, visiting secretary for about 3 weeks. So we were on a morning walk and then we were driving back to the temple on the 18th of January. Rameshwara then asked Prabhupada some questions about the efficacy of chanting the holy names. Prabhupada confirmed that if one chants even once only the holy name of Krishna, all of his sinful reactions are completely eradicated. But the problem is, he said, they again commit their sinful activities and again accumulate. So that is the efficacy of chanting the holy names. And Prabhupada very often reminded us that, yes, you have this opportunity to chant Hare Krishna. You can remove all your sinful reactions, become liberated. But if you commit offenses, then you spoil the whole business. And that came up when we were in Mayapur, March the 19th. Prabhupada was giving initiations. So he reminded his new initiates and all of us in class about the good opportunity that he has given us through initiation to cross over to the other side of the river of death. Prabhupada especially stressed that we should not fall back. We finish all the resultant action of contamination of this material life, provided we remain without being fallen again. Therefore, there is dasavida namaparada. You should know the 10 kinds of offenses. If you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, being careful not to commit the 10 kinds of offenses, then you are immediately liberated. The most dangerous offense if we think, oh, I am so fortunate, I have got this Hari Nam, and it can vanquish all kinds of sinful reaction. So, very good instrument. I shall go on committing all kinds of sinful activities and chant Hare Krishna. Then it will be neutralized. This is the most dangerous offense. Namnad balad yasya hi papa buddhi. Because I know that by chanting Hare Krishna, I shall be freed from all resultant reaction of sinful life. So let me go on. And throughout the whole day, I shall commit all kinds of sinful activities. And in the evening, I shall chant Hare Krishna. Then everything will be finished. This rascaldom is very, very dangerous. We must be very careful. Don't take the Hare Krishna mantra as an instrument to neutralize your sinful activities. It is a fact that as soon as you are initiated with the Hare Krishna mantra, you become free. But don't commit it again. So that was a warning that Prabhupada gave there. So now let's, because it's very late, we can't finish everything that I've got here. But let's go on to another effect of chanting, conquering death. So, you chant Hare Krishna, you can conquer death. Prabhupada actually attributed his being saved from death to the chanting of his disciples. On January the 20th, 1976, we were in Mayapur, and Prabhupada was, you know, talking a little bit about the early days. So he said that in 1965, he had come here to Mayapur to pay respects to his departed Guru Maharaj. Then the next day, he returned to Calcutta and he sailed for the USA. It took 27 days via the Suez Canal and the Straits of Gibraltar. For 2 days at sea, Prabhupada had severe chest pains and he thought that he might die at any time. Later in New York, he became ill with the same complaint and the doctors told him that it was a heart attack. He understood that this was the same as the trouble that he had had aboard the ship, but at that time he didn't know what it was. He said that in New York, the chanting of the devotees had saved him. So we shouldn't take that lightly. I mean, you know, the devotees were chanting and praying to Krishna. Please don't let our spiritual, you know, we've only just met Srila Prabhupada. Please don't take him away from us. You know, our spiritual lives have hardly just begun. And so Prabhupada said it was the chanting of the devotees that saved him. So what was going on exactly between him and Krishna, we don't know. But, you know, that's not a, you know, it's not a cheap thing that Prabhupada's making there, like a whimsical statement. So anyway, a couple of other incidents about death. We had... Yes, on... December 2nd, 1975, we were in Vrindavan and Prabhupada was giving class. So at the end of his class, finally, Prabhupada pointedly reminded his young audience to get on with the task of becoming Krishna conscious now while we still have the opportunity. Artadam, you do not know when you will die. At any moment you will die. Therefore, before your next death, you realize Krishna. Artadam means that even if you live only for a few years, you have to take the chance of chanting Hare Krishna, and still you are benefited. This chanting of Hare Krishna is so important that you should always think, death is coming, death is at my door, let me finish my chanting, let me finish my chanting. Always you should think like that death is already coming, so let me chant. So this is called Bhagavat Dharma. And the Krishna consciousness movement means Bhagavat Dharma. So you read Prahlad Maharaj's instructions very nicely and utilize it in your life. Your life will be successful. Thank you very much. So he's saying, even if you're young, you have to think that at any moment death will come. And of course, sometimes it does come to the young. And there was an incident in November of 1976 when a young girl came to Vrindavan with her mother. And they had a darshan with Srila Prabhupada. So this was November the 11th. So a recent arrival here in Vrindavan has been a mother and daughter, Anta Dhyana Dasi and Manisha Dasi. Manisha is initiated even though only in her early teens. But she is terminally ill with leukemia. Having given up any hope of a cure, they have come here so that Manisha can leave her body in the holy dam. So she was practically one of the first devotees to go to Vrindavan to die there. So they had requested a darshan with Srila Prabhupada and he received them this morning just before his massage. When they came in, Manisha burst into tears as they explained her condition and prognosis. She was afraid and upset at the prospect of imminent death and was clearly not mentally prepared for it. Srila Prabhupada, however, was not swayed by her weeping. He was firm and spoke rather strongly, focusing in on the reality of her condition. Rather than offer sympathies with some sentimental, bodily-based words of solace, Srila Prabhupada chose to cut through the fear and doubt shrouding his disciples' mind and intelligence, and meet the problem head on. Everyone is going to die, he said. Who is going to live? Who is here? Can you show me anyone who is going to live? Can you show me? Aunt Jana shook her head. No, everybody's going to die. So, today or tomorrow, Prabhupada said, everyone will die. So where is the anxiety? He asked them. Die or not die, tomorrow or today, but one should chant Hare Krishna, that's all. Why one should be depressed? Everyone is going to die. I am going to die tomorrow. He's going to die the day after tomorrow. Everyone will have to die. Who will live here? So, what is the anxiety? Chant Hare Krishna, that's all. Jagadish told Srila Prabhupada that she had come to die in Vrindavan. Nobody will live, Prabhupada repeated. Don't be in anxiety, that's all. Anyone who has come to this material world will die. One is going to die today, another is going to die tomorrow. It is only a question of first and second, but everyone will die. So before death, one should be complete in his Krishna consciousness. That is the success of life. The tree is standing for thousands of years, so what is the use of living like that? A tree cannot chant Hare Krishna, but lives for thousands of years. Do you think that kind of living is very worthy, standing in one place, cannot move even, and what to speak of chanting? So you have got the chance to chant Hare Krishna. Utilize that. Don't be anxious that, oh, I'm going to die. Who is going to live? Why don't you understand that? Nobody is going to live. So before death, one should be complete in Krishna consciousness. That is success. Srila Prabhupada's direct and practical words helped Manisha focus. She stopped sobbing and regained her composure, but still she had a fear. But if one is not Srila Prabhupada, then what will happen? Prabhupada didn't quite understand her query, and I repeated it. If one is not complete in their Krishna consciousness, then what will happen? She will again get birth in a human body, he assured her. That is guaranteed, so that it'll get again the chance of chanting. That is also a great gain. Ordinary person, he does not know what body he will get, the next body. But a person who is in Krishna consciousness, chanting, he is guaranteed, Suchinam, Srimatam Gehe, he is guaranteed to take birth as a human being in a very sacred family, like a brahmana or a rich family. Because he had other commitments, Prabhupada had to end the darshan at that point. So, I have to go. Despite the meeting being so short, Prabhupada's few words struck home, and Manisha was visibly relieved and thankful. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Nobody is going to live here, Prabhupada told her again as he rose from his seat. Everyone is going to die. Before death, chant Hare Krishna. With a compassionate smile of reassurance to his young disciple, he added, don't be worried. Her mother, though, still sought some further comfort. She is worried, Srila Prabhupada, about... What is that worry? I have already said everybody is going to die, Prabhupada interjected. Aunt Jana managed to be very specific. She's worried about seeing the Yamadutas. This is what she's worried about. Prabhupada addressed Manisha directly, and he repeated the practical formula for overcoming death. Chant Hare Krishna. Always think of Krishna. That's all. Manisha nodded, accepting his words as the proper solution. Yes, Srila Prabhupada. This is our business, Prabhupada concluded. The cats and dogs, they cannot do this. This is the advantage of the human form of body. Both his visitors were grateful and happy to get a few words of encouragement and guidance. Manisha left feeling heartened by her first personal meeting with a spiritual master, and the two of them will reside in the guest house until her departure. And actually, she did leave a body there in Vrindavan, I think sometime in 1977, maybe around April or May, sometime like that. She was very, very sick. She was up in the guest house. Dhananjaya Prabhu told me that, because he was living in Vrindavan at that time, he told me that later on, when Prabhupada was giving classes, he saw that Manisha was not at the class. So he asked, you know, where is this girl? And he was told that, well, she's very sick and she can't come down the stairs from the guest house by herself. So Prabhupada told Dhananjaya that he should personally make sure that she's able to come to the class every day and hear the Bhagavatam. So Dhananjaya used to go up, and I think he used to actually carry her down into the temple room so that she could hear the Bhagavatam classes. And then she left. She left in Vrindavan, and she left very successfully. So that was Prabhupada's approach. He wasn't, you know, kind of getting sucked in by this sentimental, oh, you poor thing, don't worry, you'll be all right, we'll try and do... No, Prabhupada was very... He was actually quite sharp with her. Who is going to die? Why are you crying? You know, fix your mind. That's the whole point. Just chant Hare Krishna. That's the whole business. Nobody's going to live. I'll go today. He'll go tomorrow. It's only a question of first and second. All right. It's very late. We have to drive to Zagreb today. So I'm going to finish at this point. There are a few other things here. But that's the essence. Any other last questions? Everybody happy with that? Yeah.
Would you please, sometimes you're asking these technical questions, but we should squeeze something more from you. If you can describe what was some personal experience when Prabhupada was most angry on you or some other devotee, and most happy when you saw him, that he was most blissful.
If I tell you those things, we'll be here until tomorrow. You'll have to read the books. I have a book called A Transcendental Diary. You can get it from Vishnumurti Prabhu in Belgium. He's my distributor in Europe. There are 5 volumes, 600 pages each, and each volume covers about 2 months. So the 5th volume just came out. This incident with Manisha, that's in this new volume. That just came out in March. So you can get that, and then you'll get all the information that you want. But that's... when I'm visiting somewhere else, we'll say that. It's just very late now, and I have to do my puja, and then we have to drive. And today is Thursday, and I don't want to travel in the afternoon. Prabhupada would never travel on a Thursday afternoon. It's a thing in Bengal. Actually, I just read recently that they cancelled all the aeroplanes for Thursday afternoons because nobody will fly. They've rearranged the schedules. Prabhupada also, he would never travel on a Thursday afternoon. 1975, he was supposed to come from Perth to Melbourne. The devotees had booked him on a Thursday afternoon flight. And he made them rearrange the booking for Friday morning. And when I was with him, we were in Nellore in early 76. And then we went back to Madras on the 8th of January. And then we had to fly to Bombay. And the booking was for Thursday afternoon flight. So Prabhupada wouldn't travel on Thursday afternoon. But we had no choice because of other arrangements. We had to be back in Bombay that evening. So he made Tamal Krishna Maharaj rebook for the last flight of the day, which was about 8 or 8.30. So there was a period of around like 4 o'clock until about 7.30 that he wouldn't travel on a Thursday afternoon. So I am not going to travel on Thursday afternoon. I'm going to leave here in good time so that I can get there before that period. All right? All right or not, that's it. Last question. Right. Did Srila Prabhupada put his suitcase out the day before? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to do that. I don't know that Prabhupada ever did it. He just didn't travel on Thursdays. But if Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had to travel on a Thursday, then either he would put out a suitcase or he would put out his shoes, and that would be an indication that the journey has already begun. Technical thing. It's a subtle thing. All right, we have to finish. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
His grace, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.